Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Gentleman who joins us now on the fan hotline will be asking questions during that. He covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of his work. He's Mr. Scott Petrak. Hello, Scott.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Scotty?
You know, I found your story that you have on brownzone.com really interesting because we didn't hear a whole lot about this during the week. But Joel Bitonio saying Kevin got pretty intense last Monday after the loss to the Steelers. And I don't know if it was calling guys out or screaming or yelling or whatever, but Joel said he liked it. What more have you heard about what happened last week?
Yeah, it was interesting. We're going to ask Kevin about it today because Joel talked either after Kevin had talked, so we didn't get to ask Kevin about it. I'm sure he's not going to
ask. Do you want your answer?
Great answer.
Do you want your answer right now? Scott, you know, sorry, Dan.
We keep all those in-house.
You know, I'm not going to talk about another player in my conversations with him. Am I right?
Well, yeah, but this is a conversation with the whole team that he's saying. So,
okay.
But I know he'll probably go that way or yeah. He'll go, we're moving on to New England or whatever. But it's certainly interesting because, you know, Kevin Stefanski is known for being even keel. I think that's one of the biggest knocks on him when people, you know, when the Browns lose, people like to talk about how he has no emotion. Well, obviously he showed some, which we should expect. I mean, he's a football coach, right? These guys want to win games. They're ultra competitive. So it shouldn't be a surprise that the coach gets mad when they've lost three in a row and his offense can't score any points. But the fact that he showed the guys, and Joel said it's happened a few times in their 6 years together, but he appreciated it. He said he laid out the expectations, especially for the offensive side of the ball, and told people what they needed to do. So I think that just it speaks to the frustration level, and then it speaks to how important it is to these guys and that they knew they needed to do something, and they felt like the chances have been there to win. And I think that was one of the most frustrating things is it doesn't feel like a lost cause in that building. They feel like they should be winning, and the fact that they're not is what has frustrated everybody.
Is this the game plan they're going to use moving forward? I mean, Jeff and I were both pretty excited. I think everybody was excited to see that they ran the ball, 33 times, and Judkins had 25 carries. Is that the game plan, you think, moving forward to try to be a little bit heavier towards the run, or was it the weather that dictated that yesterday?
Well, I was going to say, you can't get away from the weather aspect of it. Yeah. I think that was huge in Stefanski saying, hey, this is what we have to do. And you have to look at the opponent, too. Sure. You know, I felt that they knew that if they played a clean game, that they'd have a good chance to beat Miami. Miami would make enough mistakes, and Miami certainly made plenty of mistakes. So, you know, I don't think they believe that they can win games consistently in this league, throwing the ball 18 times. But I think it should be, and I think they realize that it should be a balance between what was on display in Pittsburgh and then what they did yesterday. Because, you know, it's not like they ran it great all day. You know, if you take away Judkins' 46-yarder, the average is not good. But it's the commitment to it. And Miami knew it was coming, too, because of the weather and because that's what the Browns were going to do.
And because they're terrible against the run.
Better. Right, right. But they loaded the box, but it was tough to throw the ball. And then the Browns had the lead, so they didn't need to throw the ball. But I think they need to find kind of the happy medium between throwing it 52 times and throwing it only 18 times.
I don't want to go back to the Pittsburgh game, but I was stunned that they ran it so little and threw it so much. And then when you turn around and flip the script a little bit, I think you're right. You've got to find a happy medium. But I wonder if your passing game is up to that happy medium, Scott. Yeah. You know, it didn't have to do much of anything yesterday, so it's hard to make any judgments. But I wonder how they think it's progressing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. But in this league, if you're going to keep up with teams that can score, you're probably going to have to throw it. Right, and have some success throwing it, so you can't just ignore it, and you can only, you know, go run, punt for so long, right? At some point, you have to force the defense to react and try to stretch the field, all those things. But, yeah, yesterday was such a hard gauge. You know, I mean, everything was underneath. You know, they did fine. Gabriel didn't throw any interceptions, got lucky once or twice. Right? Yeah. The one interception got negated by a penalty, and then it looked like one just went through the defender's hands. But that happens. You know, they got Jerry Jeudy a couple catches, Harold Fannin four. You know, they missed David Njoku. They would miss David Njoku in a normal game setting. So there's plenty of room for this offense to grow. You know, yesterday, even though they scored 31, it was so much more about the defense. The pick six, the return to the two, the kick, you know, the fumble on the kickoff. It felt more about the defense and the run game than this offense finding any kind, you know, kind of clicking.
The other thing, too, that's unsung is special teams had a good day. Like, they did what they were supposed to do. And it's amazing to me how offense, sometimes even the offense could look good, or the defense, as we know, has looked good. But the special teams messes something up. Yesterday, they did their job finally yesterday. I don't know if, and is that maybe because you're playing Miami, or are they starting to kind of believe in each other on special teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps when your kicker makes all his kicks. That's number one.
Yeah.
I thought Bohorquez had a better day. I feel like he's been inconsistent all year. There's one or two a game, you're like, hey, you know, off the side of his foot or a low line drive that gets returned. I thought he was better, pinned Miami deep a few times, which is part of the whole weather field position game. Then you get the turnover on special teams. They're still lacking the burst in the return game, you know, and I don't know if there's a solution for that, but we haven't seen that. And then there's a couple leaky coverages, even on the fumble one. On the fumble, the guy had a good return, and then they gave up another one later. So there's still room there, but, yeah, it was way more solid. And, you know, Kevin said it the week before, you have to quit losing before you can win. And I felt like special teams felt like a disaster just about every week. And this time there were no disasters and more positives than negatives.
Scott Petrak's joining us. You can read Scott's work covering the Browns at BrownsZone.com. Covers the team for the Chronicle-Telegram. The offensive line, oddly enough, when you run the football, the offensive line looks pretty good. They tried to be a little creative there. Some of those jumbo packages seem to do the trick, Scott.
Yeah, and you know, Kevin's done that before, and it's just a matter of yesterday felt like a lot more than he had. Luke Whipler was out there a bunch. I don't have the exact snap count in front of me, but he was out there a bunch. And then I like that switch to the Wildcat, too, which was about as jumbo as you can get. You know, they had two extra linemen in there. I think they went two tight ends and then Quinshon. And, you know, you take that, you get that extra blocker on the field because they took Gabriel off the field. It wasn't like he was split wide. He was off the field. So they knew they were going to run the ball. And I think when you're having some issues on the line, especially with the tackle, and they had their seventh different tackle, starting tackle combination in there, then you got to go with numbers. Like, that's the way you can try to make it work up front. And it limits what you can do in the passing game because you just don't have as many bodies, and the defense knows it's coming. But I think that is the way to add bulk. And it shows a commitment to the run game because, you know, you practice it all week, and the linemen go, okay, this is what we're going to do this week.
I don't know. I'm looking forward. I think this is going to be a good test this week against New England, too, especially because obviously now there's a relationship with Vrabel, and he kind of gets us, but we kind of probably get him a little bit better too. I don't, just as we move forward, because I mean, you can be a little bit optimistic about this team because they won yesterday. I think we're just so programmed to be so down after that. I mean, yes, right. I know they only have two wins, and I know the second win came against Miami, but I mean, you know, they're not dead. That's what I keep saying this morning, and I think it's not I think that's the mindset of a Browns fan. But this week, I mean, this would be a good week to kind of prove we're somewhere between Green Bay and Miami, that we can win against teams that are, you know, that not, you know, teams that maybe we aren't expected to win, but we can win.
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% right. And, you know, you should be able to celebrate 31-6. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Browns don't blow teams out very often, and they did, and they were clearly a better team in all facets of the game, so that you should be able to celebrate that, even though you know that, you know, Miami played about as bad as you can play. This New England game is going to be interesting. The Vrabel storyline will be, I think, big this week. You know, New England's 5-2, but in this league, I would say, okay, were they really a 6-2 team? And maybe they are. Maybe New England's that good. But it could also be a 5-2 team that's due for a letdown. And we've seen it's a week-to-week league. We know that. You watch, you know, people wrote off the Chiefs, and now they're going to the Super Bowl. And you see it with every team every week. So can the Browns go into New England? It's going to be hard, but, you know, they will have some good momentum coming off that game with how well they played. I think, did they find a formula on offense? Maybe at least they found part of the formula. I think Jim Schwartz, what he did on defense with blitzing more and blitzing, you know, the corners and the safeties and being more aggressive and moving Myles Garrett around that defensive front, that gives the New England staff a bunch more to think about. And I think that has a chance to unlock this defense's more playmaking than even it had been early in the year. So, yeah, I think the Browns go in there with some momentum, and they have the bye coming out of that. If you win two in a row heading into the bye, and then the schedule is not as difficult coming out of the bye, then you can start thinking. And this league is so interesting. After the game, guys are talking about getting on a run, right? This is the same team that just lost three in a row, couldn't remember what the feeling of winning was, and now it's, okay, you got to stockpile these wins. And that's how this league works. But if you win two in a row, then you start to think, hey, maybe we're on to something.
Scott, we've had three starts with Dylan Gabriel. And the Minnesota game, you could make the argument they should have won that game but didn't. The Pittsburgh game, he throws it 52 times, and that was a strange deal. And then yesterday, he didn't have to throw it much. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback play for three games and not have a real good feel for what you might have yet. You laugh. You feel the same way?
I do. Like, I think that there's, you know, a ceiling to what Dylan Gabriel can do just from watching him in practice in three games. And you think, okay, he's probably not going to light it up week in and week out, and that's not the kind of player he is. But it's so hard to tell because these three games are not a huge sample size and probably not an accurate sample. And then you look around him and go, well, he doesn't really have many, you know, doesn't have really receivers to throw to. That limits him, and then you get the line issues that the Browns have had. So I think it is a difficult evaluation of Dylan Gabriel so far, which is why the Browns are going to get a longer look at him. You know, yesterday I thought he was fine. He did what he needed to do. I'll tell you what, the one thing that's not debatable is he understands his role, and he understands what it takes to win a game and try not to hurt your team and not turn the ball over. And I thought he was fully aware of that yesterday and handled that well. You know, he hasn't thrown an interception in all three starts, which is really good. Now, we talked about, is there some luck involved? Sure, but that usually evens out. So I think that's the biggest positive for him, and it was again yesterday, and he just didn't hurt the team. Now, you have to be better than that to be the long-term answer at that position in this league, and you got to go win some games. May haven't asked him to do that yet, but that's going to come, and we'll see how he does on that when he is required to do that.
Scott, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Scotty.
Thanks, guys.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
But the fact that he showed the guys, and Joel said it's happened a few times in their 6 years together, but he appreciated it. He said he laid out the expectations, especially for the offensive side of the ball, and told people what they needed to do. So I think that just, it speaks to the frustration level, and then it speaks to how important it is to these guys and that they knew they needed to do something, and they felt like the chances have been there to win. And I think that was one of the most frustrating things, is it doesn't feel like a lost cause in that building. They feel like they should be winning, and the fact that they're not is what has frustrated everybody.
That was Scott Petrak just a few moments ago here on Baskin and Phelps talking about a story that he wrote, Joel Bitonio saying, Kevin kind of chewed into us. It was pretty intense last Monday. And, you know, we hear Kevin Stefanski in his press conferences, and Joel said you don't see it regularly. And, you know, Kevin's very under control in his press conferences, obviously. That's where we see him. And Joel said he's only seen it about six times since he's been here, but he's pretty intense, and they needed that. And apparently it helped. Also didn't hurt anything that you were playing a bad Miami team that was dead last against the run.
Well, he picked a good week to do it, though.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that turns things around. That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Dan Menigan is taking care of business for us. And Meredith Sanson are on the phones at 216-474-0092. Dylan Gabriel has started for three games. I have very little idea if the guy can be a big-time quarterback in the NFL.
He had a play yesterday. Must have been second quarter, where he was kind of rolling out around the 35, maybe even around the 20, sorry. And Jerry Jeudy was wide open, right ahead of him. And he chose to keep the ball rather than throw the ball. I just thought it was interesting.
Didn't sit well with you, obviously. I can tell by the look on your face.
Well, it wasn't. It's the play, I think, because Daryl Ryder has been very critical of him. Very critical. And
yes,
I looked at him and I was like, man, he's open. And there were a couple plays where you could see, again, it's a lot easier to see from the stands, or especially in the press box, what's open and what's not open up high. So I always kind of take it with a grain of salt. But there are some plays that he is leaving on the table. There's especially receivers who have broken free and seem to have a step on the defender, and if he just put the ball in the right place, it'd be a touchdown. Part of it is, I think you got to remember, it's only his third game as a starting quarterback. And he finally got his first win yesterday. The one thing he's done for Kevin Stefanski that Kevin really likes and wants is that big zero in the interception column. Yeah, he came close again yesterday, but didn't happen. So now you're, what, 12 quarters into his pro career and he hasn't thrown a pick yet? It's not bad for, you know, for a rookie.
Had one or two that got away from him, you know, yesterday that could have been intercepted. One was brought back.
And he had a Hail Mary in the first game that was intercepted that didn't count, you know, because there was a penalty on the plate.
That's a Hail Mary.
Yeah. Which probably shouldn't count in interceptions. But
there are times I watch Dylan so far, and again, so early. Okay, for us to sit here and say this guy can't play isn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to sit here and say, are you kidding? He's a star in the making, wouldn't be fair.
True.
Okay, either way, I don't think we've seen enough of him. And the situations he's been put into, I don't think have been that conducive to great judgments. For instance, Jackson Dart is playing for the Giants. Jackson Dart, who was a first-round pick this year, and obviously the Browns could have had, has looked really good.
He has.
He's passed the eye test.
Although yesterday his team needed to give him a little more help.
Oh, my goodness. But he's passed the eye test. I mean, it's pretty clear that guy can play, and the Giants found a quarterback late in the first round. And you could make the argument all day, Brown should have traded up. Yep, okay. I liked him last year coming out of the draft. I thought he was the second best guy to me after Cam Ward, but that's what they did. Anyhow, he passes the eye test. I don't think Dylan has passed the eye test yet, but I don't think he's failed it either. There are things that he does that I like. Seems very composed. Seems under control. Throws a nice ball. And seems to run the offense well. What I haven't seen a whole lot of, and I wonder if this is just him or if this is the way these games have played out, he's not been really put in a position yet, Andy, or has shown, hey, we need to make a play. I'll go make you a play. I don't think we've seen that yet. Do you? I don't have the feel for that anyway. It's like, let's go. We got to go 90 yards. Let's go. I'll get us there. I mean, I'm trying to think of where we've been. I don't have a feel for that yet.
It's almost like, can you run the two-minute offense the whole game sort of feeling? Or
well, I don't have any problem with that. I don't think he's done a bad job. I also don't think he's done a great job. And I think we need to see more before you can make any real judgments about how he's played.
Yeah.
But I don't mind him. I think he
has given you no reason to be like, yeah, he's the man.
And he's given you no reason to think, boy, this guy is lousy.
Horrible. Yeah,
I don't think. Leroy's in Cleveland. Leroy.
Leroy.
Hey.
What's up?
How you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
I go by Bad Dad.
Bad Dad. Well, call in and tell him your name's Ben.
I like that.
But
unless I was your kid, then I don't know.
Yeah, I hope you're a bad dad, not good.
Not bad meaning bad, but bad meaning good.
Yeah, I got it.
But you just said something that I noticed at the game yesterday.
Tell me.
When he had scrambled and Judy was right there, maybe 10 yards.
Same play.
Further ahead of him. Yeah. And I'm like, throw the ball. I'm screaming at the TV. Throw the ball, you know, and not even just that. And he's not a bad quarterback, but, like, when he goes to the sidelines, I even seen Shador trying to, like, you know, talk to him. Like, he just kind of, like, brushes everybody off. Like, he doesn't want to be here, you know, and I don't want to speculate like that, but he's not, like, interacting. Even during the halftime report, she even said, like, no smiles. You know, like
he doesn't though. He hasn't since he's been here. I don't think that's
he handles himself in a pretty straightforward, professional way.
He's been that way the whole time.
Yeah,
he's always. I mean, even Oregon, he was like that.
I mean, we all kind of miserable. Shit, show some life.
All right, Bad Dad. I don't the whole get excited and you know. You kind of want your quarterback to be under control, don't you? I mean, if your quarterback's all over the place, your offense is usually all over the place. No?
No, I totally. I'm okay with him. It's just it's a flat line. It's not low. It's not high. It's just a flat line. And he hasn't done anything. I mean, what did he throw the ball 52 times last game?
Yeah, 18 this time.
But they only had one play over 20 yards 2 games ago.
I wonder how much of what we're because
I've said this. I know where you're going. I said that. I asked Ivis the question you're about to say yesterday.
We both think he's been kind of nondescript so far.
Yeah,
that might be the best way to describe him for me. Kind of nondescript. He's been there. He hasn't been great. He hasn't been bad. I wonder how much of it is. Are they not letting him do stuff that would allow him to show off what he can do? Is that what you thought? I was going to say?
Yeah. Like, are they going to turn him loose, or is this what he is?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because I don't know the answer to that. Is this what he's capable of, or is he capable of more and they're not letting him do it?
It might go back to what you were saying before. What happens if they're down 5 points, 6 points late in the game, they have the ball at the 20, and they've got 2 minutes to get down the field?
Yeah,
that might be the moment that we find him, and that might be the moment that he endures himself to Browns fans if he can drive the field and get a win.
Maybe. Kevin's in Cuyahoga Falls. Hi, Kevin.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. 31-6, Kev.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Hey, I'll share my Browns credentials if we're doing that today. I could send you a picture of my ticket from December 24th, 1988, baby. I still have it in the old trunk somewhere.
So good resume, man. Good resume.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, my dad... Thank you. And also, unfortunately, the biggest Browns fan, my dad, isn't with us. God rest his soul. And he was here. He would also tell you that Jim Brown was the greatest running back to ever walk the planet. So, you know, you got that, too.
Well, he wouldn't be wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of our dads would say the same thing. Hey, you know, Jeff, I got to tell you, you and Tavis, I mean, I got to give you guys a gold medal. I was driving my son back to college after the game, and we put on the Odyssey app and listened to the post game, and we're like, yeah, this is great. We won the game. We were so happy. And then I hear people calling and complaining. And then this morning I'm hearing complaining.
I heard the morning complaint, and I couldn't believe it. I wasn't going to bring it up, but... I mean, turned on the radio and heard the, well, why didn't Shador get in the game at the end of the game? I'm like, what?
Yeah. Come on, isn't this Victory Monday?
Yes. I'm not booing it. I'm not going to boo it. I don't think that's, it's just
too late. Already been booed.
Right, I booed. You did it. Right, you booed.
Listen, we did what we had to do. It was a sloppy, awful weather game. We ran the ball well. I mean, we got a guy in Judkins who went beast mode and just punched him. He literally knocked guys over and walked his way. I mean, that talk about Marshawn Lynch 2.0. This guy's on his way. And that should be winning Browns fans over. We got a beast of a running back that literally just bowls his way into the end zone three times. We didn't need to throw it 50 times. The weather didn't indicate it. You know, all that stuff. We did what we needed to do. We won the game. We should all be happy. And maybe, here's my last thought, maybe we're not throwing long passes because we've already got about 5-6 games of watching our receivers not catching those passes. So, I mean, you know, instead of piling on Gabriel, who's frankly done a great job, he's looked competent, he's looked confident, he's not made any mistakes whatsoever, he's got a good win under his belt. Maybe if you're going to be critiquing a little bit, maybe it's the guys not catching the ball and the weather that day as to why we're not throwing 20 and 30 yard passes. Oh, and by the way, look what happened to the other team when they were chucking it 30 yards in the air. Didn't work out too well for them, did it? So I say, let's be happy. Let's enjoy the win and let's just take it and come on New England. Let's kick their butts too.
There you go, Kevin. Nice job. We'll see. The New England game will be a challenge. And you know, we're happy the Browns won a game, clearly. You know, it had been terrible the way things have been going. This game will be telling coming up on Sunday. This one will be telling. Eric is in Mentor. Hello, Eric.
What's up, Eric?
Welcome.
Hey, guys.
What do you got, man?
You know, I've been hearing some of these national shows that Haslam now wants a big name coach.
Really? Where'd you hear that at? I didn't hear any of that. What national show was saying that?
Well, on last night on your station, what's his name? Out of New York. He's got the funny accent.
You heard on our radio station, you heard one of our overnight guys? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, a big name coach.
Mm.
Now, who's a big name coach?
That's out there and available right now?
Well, Nick Saban has been mentioned. I don't know if that's practical or not.
Say, John Gruden.
You know, they have a coach, Eric, right now. Thank you, Eric. If the Browns end up making a coaching change, I'm sure they'll talk to a lot of people. Some of them we know and some of them we won't.
We brought this up on Friday, though, because he said that, and I was just curious where he heard it, because normally, if you think they're going to make a switch in the middle of the season, you're starting to hear, Dan and I had this conversation, you'll hear trickles of information trying to come out. I haven't heard anything, and no offense to any host on any station, but unless I'm hearing it from a reporter who's in it every day, I'm not buying speculation. That's all.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. Tyvus Powell from the Browns Radio Network is going to join us coming up at noon. The Browns getting a win yesterday. That was good. Another guy who threw a baseball here is getting a big opportunity tonight. I'm going to touch on that as we continue. A big day here because the Browns were a winner yesterday, 31-6 over the Dolphins.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get back into the Browns, Game 7 tonight, the American League Championship Series. Shane Bieber on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays, trying to pitch the Toronto Blue Jays into the World Series. On the other side, you got a couple local guys and Josh Naylor for Seattle. Who are you pulling for tonight?
Who have I been pulling for the whole time?
Toronto. I'm still pulling for Seattle.
Mark and he has family members at Silly Fair. Shapiro does. You may know them better as the Mangini's, but yeah. I don't know. And there's a couple guys from, you know, that played here that are in Toronto now. So I'm rooting for the Blue Jays. But in particular, I'm rooting for Bieber tonight. I just want to see him. You know, he got hurt. It wasn't like we were going to hang on to him forever. So, and I'd like to see him win tonight. I would. I know. I'm not going to be mad if Seattle wins, though. And by the way, I think either one of these teams is probably going to get dusted by the Dodgers anyway. So,
Dodgers are due to lose.
Oh, is that the way you're going to look at it, Dan? If someone told you who's going to win the World Series today, you would say
same team. I'd say
if the Mariners make it, I like the Mariners over the Dodgers.
Oh, no way!
I think the Mariners are the best team in baseball.
Mariners have some talent, Andy.
They have a bullpen. The Dodgers do not.
Guys. The Dodgers may have the best guy that's ever played the game.
Right, oh, now. You don't have to tell me twice. I watched him hit three home runs and throw six in the third.
Yeah.
With 10 strikeouts.
In the NLCS. I mean, come on.
He is a god amongst mortals.
Like, yes, he is.
This is exactly what it was like when you would read about Hercules. Like, that's what I feel like I'm doing right now.
He's on a roll.
He's on a roll.
The Dodgers are not losing the World Series this year. Sorry.
Like, there's no way someone could best a lion or kill a hydra or anything like that. And then I watch Shohei Ohtani. It's like, yeah, maybe he could. Might be on the table.
That guy's really good.
Man. And the Dodgers are just chilling right now, letting these guys play out.
Do you think, I don't want to go off on this tangent, but I'm going to anyway. So what the hey. Does Ohtani's success lead to more of this? And I know we've touched on it in the past, but the other day, you know, the guy... And as a pitcher, he's been good. He's had some Tommy John issues that haven't really affected his hitting at all. But he's had some pitching issues which have kept him off the mound. I would think if you're the Dodgers, you would think he's more valuable as a bat. However, to be able to do both is phenomenal because, you know, at the critical time, he has stepped in and been outstanding. When kids play baseball, it's not until high school and sometimes even college and sometimes not even then when if you're a pitcher, they take the bat out of your hands. And oftentimes, you know, your best pitchers are your best hitters as kids growing up, right? Because they can do it all. I wonder if it changes the way that major league organizations think a little bit.
Jeff, there just aren't many athletes like that multi.
Without question.
I mean, like I was just thinking even Deion Sanders, right? Deion was a kick returner or punt returner and a corner, right? And then played baseball on top of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Bo Jackson, same thing. You know, you're like Travis Hunter. We're talking about that too. Would I like to see more of it? Yeah. I'd like to see more of the opportunity because there are a lot of great hitters that lock themselves into being pitcher and we never get to see them take another swing. And I don't know if that's 100% right. And you would think if you were payroll conscientious, you would want more Shohei Ohtanis, at least for the beginning of their career, till you can't afford them.
That's really true.
It goes back to that same model of, okay, if we're just going to let the starters go five innings, right? It's all about return on investment for a starter that we believe should only go five innings. Meanwhile, the Dodgers have blown that up in the playoffs. So,
which, by the way, is great.
I love it. I love the thought of a starter going nine innings. Come on.
The only issue is here, and Andy, this is a real deal. As a starter in today's game, you have to be efficient. I mean, they're not going to throw you 130 pitches.
No, I can agree.
You're not going 120. So you've got to do your job.
Pitch count matters. And by the way, if you let a guy go 120, what's he really going when you talk about bullpen before the game and warm-up pitches and stuff like that?
200 plus.
Yeah.
It's the genius of desperation. When your bullpen is terrible, you rely on your starters, and your starters can give you some innings. I mean, that's what you're watching with the Dodgers.
But it hasn't always been that way. Like, it wasn't desperation.
Yeah, but you know what, though,
Dan? But right now it is the genius of desperation.
But Dan, let me argue with you on
this. Please.
If their starters weren't doing the job and their pitch counts were out of control, they'd be going to the bullpen anyway.
Right, and they might have lost that series.
Right, exactly. But the starters are doing what starters used to do. This is my game. I'm going to go 7, 8, 9 innings, and I'm going to keep us in this game, and I'm going to keep my pitch count down so I can stay on the mound.
But the difference is that you're no longer back in those days, and I'm look, everybody's favorite era of baseball is always going to be the one they grew up and enjoyed the most. I wonder what that would look like if you saw Mike Schmidt be able to sit down and have an iPad put in his face saying, hey, here's what we're seeing right now. Here are the tells that are going on with
Mike
this
Schmidt
pitcher.
Would tell you he didn't need an iPad to know what was coming.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah, but you don't think.
How about Albert Bell? Albert Bell didn't have an iPad. He went back and took notes on everybody. So, thank you.
Right. But do you think those guys would turn it down?
No, I think they would take advantage.
Right.
And Albert, by the way, Albert spent hours in the back room with Video Joe watching every at bat, every pitch.
Agreed. I'm not trashing anyone from the past. I'm saying that the pitching is better than it's ever been, but the hitting is also in a place where it has more technology and more help going toward it than it's ever been because no one has to rewind tape anymore. It's all digitized, so it's so easy to just go, okay, what are we seeing here? What are we looking at for pitch counts? What are we looking at for movement? And we see in a tell from the pitcher themselves, is his arm moving a little bit farther? Can he keep an eye on something? It's so much easier to do that now that throwing just waves of pitching at these guys keeps them so off balance and having those starters go deep.
I don't want to argue with you on this point, but I will.
Sure.
Is pitching better than it's ever been?
Yes.
Or is it different than it's been? And I say that for this reason. Pitching now is, go give me five innings. Give me all you have for five innings. And then we're going to go to the bullpen, and we're going to throw four different pitchers at every hitter, and nobody's going to see the same pitcher three times. You could make the argument that back in, and you can go back as far as Bob Feller. You can go back to Roger Clemens. You can go Jim Palmer, whatever you want to do. That these guys might have been better all-around pitchers because they pitched a game. You know what I mean? This is my game, and I'm going to go 7 or 8, as opposed to here's my 4 2/3, and I'm out of here. And then here comes Johnny throwing 100 miles an hour. Here comes Johnny throwing left-handed 102 miles an hour. Here comes Jimmy throwing 98, and curveball that's 12-6 curve, it's dropping into the dirt, and there's no way you're going to hit it. You know what I mean? I think major league teams are using pitching differently than they did forever.
I look at it as, yes, it's a different style of pitching. You're 100% right. Greg Maddux never had a pitch lab, and I wonder what it would look like if we gave Greg Maddux a pitch lab. Like, what would happen?
Meaning what? He'd be better?
Yeah.
Here's what I'm saying.
What would happen if we could take Greg Maddux and go, hey, you want to make that cutter even nastier? Hey, Mariano Rivera.
Who at the end of his career is throwing like 89 or 90.
And by the way, if I could get to 102, it does. There's no analytics for that. You just can't hit it.
Not totally true.
If you could throw 102 or above on every pitch.
Well, putting it where you want it.
Putting it where you want it.
Yeah, or putting it where you want it.
I mean, you can... These hitters, honestly, have gotten better.
Almost like NFL rapid fire used to.
It was.
NFL rapid fire used to go, ping, 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 choo, pew.
Okay. Yeah, hitters have gotten better at hitting speed too. You got to give credit to the hitters and all of that as well. But that's always my retort on that one is, okay, so what would happen if we gave Randy Johnson a pitch lab and said, hey, earlier in your career, we could actually teach you how to throw that changeup that became really good toward the tail end.
Remember, Randy was a relief pitcher for a number of years before he became a starter. Well, enjoy it tonight. It's game 7. We'll be talking about it tomorrow. Shane Bieber going, and Andrés Giménez is there, and Ernie Clement, and Miles Straw, and Mark Shapiro will be rooting them on because he helped put the team together with Ross Atkins, all these Cleveland guys that were there. And on the other side, you have Luke Rayleigh from Highland High School, Dominic Canzone from Walsh Jesuit High School, Josh Naylor from your Cleveland Guardians. It should be a great game 7. And honestly, it's what baseball is all about. So that it could be an awful lot of fun tonight. Watch it along with the 2 Monday Night Football games. Tyvis Powell is our partner on the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Pre-game Andy, post-game with me. We're going to talk to Tyvis next, right here on Baskin and Phelps.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.